The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network is proud to present The Orthodox Medievalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor of history, a professional writer, and a priest of the Russian Orthodox Church. His web journal can be found at russjournal.com. That's russjournal.com. And now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, I would like to welcome you back to yet another edition of The Orthodox Medievalist. And as you may have noticed on this show, we're kind of all over the place. You know, we deal with the same general concept, Russia and Ukraine, and the Orthodox vision and what that means spiritually, metaphysically, politically, everything else. But we're all over the place in the sense that we are dealing with things that sometimes are theoretical, sometimes are more or less practical, but our focus is exactly the same, and that's something that we're going to continue on this show. And we're going to continue today to deal with somebody that I have been an admirer of for a very long time. And he's somebody who is not, I think there's very there's good reason why he's not known in the West. And that is a philosopher and theologian from 18th century Ukraine. And his name is Gregory Skovoroda. Skovoroda is, maybe for lack of a better term, the official philosopher of Ukraine, and he's somebody that I personally hold to be somebody very close to the ancient Orthodox tradition as a philosopher, as a writer, but also as a poet. And so today we're going to deal, generally speaking, with Gregory Skovoroda and his basic doctrine. So we're going to begin, as we should in these kind of things, with the concept of matter and what matter is. And it's always shocked me how modern science has really struggled to define the term matter. It's often very difficult to prove without a doubt the existence of matter. In fact, David Hume said it was impossible, and so many of the rationalists struggled with this concept. But for Skovoroda, matter is what he terms painted mud. Matter is something that is unreal. It is something that exists solely for the senses. Matter for him is that which appears. But it's very typical for a rationalist approach to the world, that which appears is not that which is real. That which is real is what is behind appearance. And in fact, you know, it goes to the concept that we call people superficial who can't get beyond appearances. Appearance is the only thing that matters. It has a moral connection to it, that appearance is fashion and trend and everything else. But what a real philosopher, what a real a thinker, what a real poet wants to do, and maybe that's something that kind of connects all the different shows that we've had here on the Orthodox Medievalist, is getting beyond appearances. We are talking about what makes appearances appear. That is quite literally what the term metaphysics mean. What is beyond appearance? Appearance doesn't impress the serious thinker. What really matters is what's beyond or behind appearance. And so for Skovoroda, matter is defined as that which our senses can pick up, but for that reason is more or less uninteresting. But I guess the only time that is actually interesting at any level is the fact that it leads to sin, it leads to error, it leads to, it's seductive, it's highly problematic. It appeals not to our reason, but appearances appeal to our passion. That appearance is base. Appearance is, metaphysically speaking, repulsive. It is a shadow of what actually exists. So when Scovadora and when the Orthodox Church, now I'm not saying that Scovadora is a philosopher of Orthodoxy. He was Orthodox. He was fired from his position as a professor in Ukraine. He was an independent thinker. He was a man to be admired. But he was Orthodox, theologically speaking, and was a loyal son of the Orthodox Church. But I'm not necessarily saying he is somehow, by virtue of that, an Orthodox theologian. He is very useful for Orthodox theology. And I have to say that Scovadora should be read more. And there's much in Scovadora that reveals the specifically Ukrainian idea, the Ukrainian idea of Orthodoxy, and its concept of reality, its concept of morality and happiness, and everything that this is really all about. And it's really a shame that this man is not taken seriously, in the West. But, when Scovadora refers to the world, he's referring to it as a very technical term. The world is this mess of appearance. This seductive chaos of appearance. That which masks what is actually real. But what is actually real is spirit. Matter is false. Matter is false in that it is the expression of spirit, but it's a fallen expression of spirit. So when Scovadora makes reference to the world, he is making reference to it identically to how the Orthodox Church makes reference to it. It's something that is unreal in the sense that it provokes passion. It is provocative. It is something that in this fallen state may derive from spirit, but as much as it manifests it, it also conceals it. This is something you see it in Dostoevsky, you see it in Gogol, you see it all over the place. This is something very important to the Slavic approach to the world, the Orthodox approach to the world in the Slavic world. So, that being said, what is this that lies beyond the shadow? What is it that we should be concerned about? And it is the one substance, that one substance that you see even in Spinoza. Spinoza, remember, I've written on him before. He is a Renaissance figure. He is an anti-Talmudic Jew. Any anti-Talmudic Jew is a friend of mine, to be perfectly honest. And you have a lot of connections between Spinoza and Scovadora that are to be taken very seriously. In fact, Spinoza was excommunicated from the Amsterdam Sephardic synagogue precisely because he rejected the Talmud. But he rejected the Talmud in the name of what Christians will call the Logos. That singular substance that lies at the root of all appearance. It is what is real. Appearance is not real. Appearance is deceptive. Appearance, the shapes and the colors and the sounds, these things are manipulative. What really matters is the singular substance. This one substance is the presence, the power, the energy, to use a very specifically Orthodox term, the energy of God manifest in nature. In fact, both Spinoza and Scovadora will hold that that which is truly real is the energy of God that lies at the essence of all things, but in so doing is the connection between and among all things. So when Spinoza and Scovadora refer to nature, they are referring to the Logos. They are referring to the energies of God manifest in nature. In fact, it is nature. Appearance is a perversion of nature, or at the very least, it is of a lower order. It is not real. What we need to concern ourselves with is the cause of appearance, and that is logos. For Skovoroda, the symbol of death and chaos is, in his poetry, it's the symbol of water. And you see this quite often, actually. I think you see it in Plato, you see it in Apostolos Makrakis, you see it in a lot of Orthodox thinking, where water is the principle of chaos. It is the principle of the flux. It is the principle of non-reality. Because reality is something that's based on logos, and logos is that which is ordered, that which is law-bound. Laws don't make themselves. Laws have to be granted. They have to be given by a higher intelligence. So, in Skovoroda's poetry, remember, these metaphysical ideas are really manifest poetically. And you see this in Plato. Plato, you know, really was of the view that regular expository prose is not the best way to express these highly complicated ideas. They have to be expressed really in poetry, in imagery, something that is evocative rather than provocative. So, for Skovoroda, the world of appearance is the world of water. Symbolically speaking, it's the world that is constantly changing, constantly manipulative, is very dangerous, has good sides, has bad sides. You see it also in fire. Fire can be a very good thing. Fire can be a horrible thing. It's always changing. It represents chaos. Life is just the opposite. It's dry land. It's the head. It's the male. It's the circle. It's that which is law-bound, that which is approachable through reason. So think of it this way. When you're dealing with metaphysics, you're dealing with metaphysics from an Orthodox, and in this case, a Ukrainian point of view, the manifestation of God. Now, we're not talking pantheism here. This is not God. God is not nature. However, his energies are present and manifest in nature. Those are two very different things. What does not perish in nature is the divine manifestation in nature. We know that the problem with appearance is that it comes to be and it passes away. It's always changing. It's always changing its manifestation to us. It's chaos. It can be deceptive. It can be manipulative. But when we talk about nature as something that is law-bound, the minute we talk about law, we have to talk about reason. But when we talk about those two things, we have to talk about that power that grants not only the law that we find in nature, that the ancients knew existed in nature, that Plato and Aristotle knew existed in nature, that even the Old Testament prophets were aware that existed in nature. We talk about law and reason, but then there's also a third entity. That third entity is the ability of human beings to be able to comprehend that. That there is this logos, there is this reason, there is this force, there is this energy in nature that is law-bound and gives a certain regularity to appearance, that which is beyond and behind appearance, that which does not come to be and pass away, that is eternal, that is God. God is eternal. God is also inwardly manifest. And I've said this before, and I will say it again and again and again. I just think it is falsehood to hold to the view that God is this being in the sky floating around. That is falsehood. That is not the Orthodox vision. That is not the biblical vision. That is not the vision of Skovoroda or any of the great theologians in Orthodox history. God is manifest in nature. He exists in a dimension that we do not have access to. Again, even Spinoza says, you know, we have access to two things. You know, what he calls, the attributes of substance, the attributes of logos, are extension, matter, and thought, or reason. That's it. But Spinoza will also hold, the followers of Spinoza, by the way, people like Albert Einstein were also followers of Spinoza, to a certain extent anyway. But that doesn't mean that there's only those two attributes in existence. We only have access to those two. We can reason and we can sense things that are extended, material things. Reason and extension, thought and matter. This is what Spinoza says is really the only two things that are manifest to humanity. But he also says that just because those are the two things that are manifest to us doesn't mean that they're the only two things in existence. And I want to make it very clear here that our saints, including people who are alive right now, our saints, because of their intense asceticism, because of their constant state of prayer, because of their constant self-denial, have been given access to other dimensions of reality. And if we were to go to Mount Athos, or to the Kiev Caves, or to the Lam, or to Solovki, or to any of the great monastic centers of the Orthodox world, there are people who live in a universe that is not bound strictly by those two very limited means of apprehension, that is to say, thought and matter. And you have saints, many of whom... of course, we have many in history, but many who are alive today, many that I have met, who see things. They're not crazy. I mean, I've spoken to them. We could read their writings. They're very lucid and very intelligent, and yet they see spiritual entities that you and I, because of our sinfulness and stupidity, cannot see. Other elements of reality have been opened up to them. That is one of the ways that we define holiness. This is the real purpose, ultimately, of the ascetic life. So, I want to hold that God is not creation, but his energy is manifest in creation. So, the saints could look at even the simplest of objects, and they just don't see what we see. We see colors and we see shapes and we hear sounds and we could feel the texture of the object. That's all that's open to us. The saints have been able to see other things, experience other things way beyond the five senses. And this is the case of monastics even today, alive at these monastic centers, who are known for this kind of extrasensory perception that derives not from some trick, but from years, from decades of asceticism and of struggle. But Scovadora is dealing in these terms because he's talking about two sides of reality. The one side where we almost all live, the side of appearance, the world of cause and effect, the world of power, where you could manipulate things, you could manipulate people, you could force people to do things. This is the realm of the state. This is the realm of money. This is the realm of arbitrary hierarchy. This is also the realm of magic, the manipulation of cause and effect. That is where most of us live. But that's the realm of sin. This is what Adam and Eve were, they were exiled, so to speak, into this world. In the Old Testament, it's manifest by Babylon, by Tyre, by the great trading cities dominated by the powerful, by those with money, who sacrificed the welfare of their people. Sacrificed the welfare of their people for the sake of their own material gain. And that was ritualized in places like Tyre and Babylon via human sacrifice. And that's what human sacrifice is. It is a symbol of the secular reality of oligarchy. That's what human sacrifice is. We sacrifice the welfare of others so that we, the oligarchy, can enjoy our wealth and our power. That is ritualized in human sacrifice. It is ritualized in the Old Testament in Cain's murder of Abel. Cain was then the builder of the first cities, and the Canaanite cities, such as Tyre, in a certain sense anyway, derived from that mentality. This is something that people like Skovoroda are promoting. The concept is that reality has two sides, the material side and the spiritual side. The spiritual side is very difficult for us in our sinful state to understand. This is absolutely central. Only through deep asceticism, deep self-denial, and I think, you know, Skovoroda will hold that non-Christians like Plato, like Marcus Aurelius, these kind of people, to some, you know, Lao Tzu in China, these people to some extent can experience this world. They didn't know it in its fullness, but to some extent, they were the prophets of a very different realm of being. A realm of being that is not simply based on the five senses, but goes beyond that and goes straight to the heart of reason. The Logos. This is absolutely positively central. And, you know, the ancient church fathers recognized that Plato and Aristotle were, in a sense, prophets. That God permitted them a very limited insight into that which was not appearance, that which was beyond appearance. This is something that people like Skovoroda and the Ukrainian Orthodox tradition stresses over and over. And this is why I hold that Skovoroda, who really was a wandering a preacher, you know, he had been a professor of philosophy for a while. He was fired and kind of then ended up, I mean, he never married, never had kids. He just kind of wandered the countryside preaching to anyone who will listen. And the man became legendary. And the man in Ukraine, well, he was called the Ukrainian Socrates. The message is deceptively simple. But I have given you the kind of the basic outline that everything exists in duality. Everything exists in forms of two. There is the external and there is the internal. The external is the problem, the realm of power, the realm of cause and effect. It's the internal, the logos, spirit, reason, that which is beyond appearance. That's where we are supposed to live. That's how human beings are designed to live. We'll be back in a few minutes. When we come back, we're going to talk about how this actually manifests itself in moral teaching and moral thinking. We'll be right back.
Don't go away, because there's more on the Orthodox Medievalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Let's return to the Orthodox Medievalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com. And now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Welcome Okay, everybody, we are back. We are talking about Ukrainian philosophy. We're talking about the Ukrainian Orthodox ideal as manifest in a very eccentric, wandering preacher, a man who still is very much lionized in Ukraine, but unfortunately not known outside of Ukraine, and that is Grigory or Hikhori Skovedor. And he is primarily a poet and a preacher, and he is a man who, although has academic training, really like so many people with talent, can't handle the stifling world of academia. And this is the case in the 18th century Russian Empire, as it is right now. And the real problem, the real issue is bureaucracy. And you know, we're dealing with some difficult stuff, but I think it's important because it really is foundational. It's fundamental how we view the world, and how we view the world and how we envision this world has everything to do with how we resist those with power. But the academic world in Skovedora's day and today have one thing in common, and that's stagnation. The academic world in America is completely stagnant. You have to express the dominant, politically correct idea, or you will be eliminated. That happened to me. That has happened to many of my friends. And it's all pretty much the same. We are white. We are male. We refuse to follow the fashions of the major foundations in terms of ideology. This is our introduction to the second half of this talk. We're talking about the nature of morality. But when we're talking about the nature of morality here, we're talking about something else. We're also talking about the nature of resistance. Resistance to the powers that be. Because power exists solely in the realm of appearance. It is the manipulation of the forces of nature for your own benefit. But, you know, historically, this has been for the elite, by the elite. And I don't care if you call it magic or science, it's based on the same thing. Magic and science are based on the idea of the manipulation of matter for the benefit of the elite. Think of it this way. The concept of magic is to use nature for your own benefit. So, for wish fulfillment. I want such and such, therefore I will invent something that will give me such and such. The Orthodox idea, and this exists even in the Old Testament, the Orthodox idea is not so much the manipulation of matter, but this idea that I'm given the wisdom to see God's presence and see his manifestation in whatever it is that happens to befall me. And, in the Psalms and in the Old Testament, you see this concept that the wealthy die. Massive empires like Babylonia, huge trading cities like Tyre, capital of Phoenicia, they're all gone. They were conquered eventually. Carthage, which was actually a satellite of Tyre, destroyed, conquered by Rome. Rome, of course, now long gone. You see, the idea of this wealth and power, it has a superficial appeal. St. John Chrysostom talks about people, you know, who appear at least to have money and power. To be able to manipulate people, to have access to all the latest technology. And yet he holds that these people are also loaded with worries and concerns. Can I lose everything? What if I get sick? You know, what if all my friends only care about me because I have this power? What am I without this power? Am I just an empty shell? So people like St. John Chrysostom, St. Cyprian, and so many others, they hold to this view that all of this is superficial. and that what we should be pursuing is spiritual wholeness, contentment, the understanding that if we have faith, God will take care of us. And this is basically the view of Scovadora. Scovadora holds that wisdom is what we should concern ourselves with. But wisdom is defined as that totality of knowledge that we have to be happy. Happiness is the highest goal of human life. This is very important. To be happy is the highest goal of human life, but what is it? It is not to be found in goods. It is not to be found in the manipulation of nature. It is not to be found in that lower realm of appearance. That which comes to be and fades away. That which is deceptive. That which is always changing. It is to be found in, really for lack of a better term, serenity. Inner peace, the virtues, and all of that, as I've said before, has as its core being able to see the power of Logos, this singular presence of God in everything that befalls you, and this happiness, and you see this in Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor, you even see it in Socrates. Happiness is to be found within the struggle. This is something that you also read about substantially in Alexander Solzhenitsyn when he's talking about his time in the camp. It is not the external possession of power or goods or prestige that matters. Solzhenitsyn holds in all of his writings, not just in the Archipelago, but also in works like The Red Wheel, all over the place, that happiness can even be found in the camps. It's a matter of seeing God's presence, being able to interpret what happens to you in light of the spirit, not in terms of matter and appearance. And, you know, we think of our situation today as nationalists, fighting the New World Order, where everything is against us. I mean, our people are losing jobs. Our people are being hounded and attacked and slandered. And, you know, I mean, our people are you know, pretty good in talking about, you know, the politics and morality and how the regime operates and all this other stuff. But, you know, what they never talk about is how we, me and you, how do we psychologically adjust to living in such a circumstance? You know, how do you raise kids? How do you have a rational family life? You know, we all know what it's like to lose friends. You know, in terms of making war on Zionism and the warfare state and all this other nonsense, we know what it is to be attacked, even physically attacked. So the question is, how do we view the world? How do we view our place in the world such that we can psychologically withstand the attacks that are going to come to us? And that's one of the reasons that when I first began reading many years ago the poetry of Scovadora, I was very much taken by it. And he's sort of a Christian version, an Orthodox version of Marcus Aurelius. But we see and we come, we're really, you know, the sensitive among us, the spiritual among us, are forced to see God's presence when we come under attack, precisely because we are under attack. What does this all mean? How do we interpret it? So, for people like Scovadora and Solzhenitsyn and so many others, happiness is never to be found in goods. It's never to be found in power. Power always corrupts. And, you know, I mean, as much as I despise the New World Order and consider as my friend anyone who despises and fights against the New World Order, I wonder if our people, our friends, our allies in gaining power are going to behave any differently than the current bunch of sleazebags that have power. Power in and of itself is a problem. Again, this is something that Solzhenitsyn talks about in all of his works. Power is a problem. power puts you in the world of illusion. It puts you in that world of cause and effect. You even see this in the church. You know, some of the most corrupt people in the Orthodox Church are the bishops and the clergy. Because they live in a world of power. They live in a world where they're worried about budgets and administration and bureaucracy and all this crap. All of this belongs to death. It belongs to the fallen world. It belongs to the world of sin. You know, and so the truth is often to be found in the common folk. This is something so Ukrainian. You see it in Shevchenko, you see it in Evan Franko, you see it in Skovoroda, you see it all over the intellectual history of the Ukrainian people, that virtue and the real life is to be found on the land. It's to be found in the simple life. It's to be found in the life of the farmer. Where happiness is to be found in a life that has the fewest moving parts and that is dedicated entirely to the world of spirit, to the world of the Logos. This is something of immense importance in our time. There are very few of us who don't know somebody, and there's certainly none of us who haven't read about somebody who has lost everything in this economic debacle, where you have upper middle class people losing their homes. And yet I thought this was the American dream. It is not. It's a lie. Because what the system can give you, the system can take away. Happiness is not to be found in these things, but happiness is easily accessible. Solzhenitsyn says this, Skovoroda says this, Dostoevsky says this. It's accessible to everybody. Socrates says this. It is to be found in a rejection of the world of appearance, in the world of prestige. So, what is happening here? We're talking about a worldview that sees everything as twofold. That there is the real and then there is the ideal. There is God, there is nature. There is spirit, there is matter. Where our mentality and our vision has to find rest is in the ideal, that which is actually real. Skovoroda talks about the individual as made up of two things, the heart, and he's not making reference to the heart as an actual physical organ, the heart and the body, the appearance and the essence. The heart is the center of the man. The heart is the spirit, the soul. Now, the word soul is problematic. The soul of the carnal person, the carnal individual, is a matter of the physical passions, the desire for food and shelter and everything else, the typical animal passions, and the intellect, that which can abstract from sense impressions. But the Orthodox vision and the vision of the truly spiritual man says that there's something else. There is the spirit. That spirit is what Skovoroda means by the heart. Everybody has a soul, but only the spiritual person, and in our view, only the Orthodox person actually has the spirit. That which can see the Logos present in nature, to see God's energy manifest in nature. Happiness is based upon this. And this is something else where people like Skovoroda fit with the mentality of Baruch Spinoza. This idea that we see things happening to us not as some random meaningless event, but as the Logos communicating with those who have faith in it. So the heart, the center, the spirit of man, Skovoroda also, and this is something worth talking about, manifests something that we call the vocation. vocation. Every individual has a specific role to play. And this is a Christian idea. This is, you know, within the church, there are many, many different roles. And that vocation, whether it be clerical, whether it be manual labor, whether it be monastic, whether it be intellectual, whether it be military, whatever it is to be found in the heart. God has implanted it there. This is the Spirit of God speaking to the individual. You must follow this vocation and not worry about consequences. Don't worry about consequences. God will take care of that universe. Skovoroda holds that happiness is to be found in three specific things. Number one, the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments, and you see this all throughout the Christian world, are little more than an expression of natural law. In order to live a rational life, all of these have to be followed. The second thing is your vocation. You know, I grew up in a bourgeois society, a sick society that said what you need to do is what makes you money, what gives you prestige, what allows you to buy a nice house. I rejected that. I explicitly rejected that when I was in college. And I hate that concept. Any intelligent person hates that concept. I followed the spiritual struggle as a philosopher and historian. And even though I'm not as wealthy as my parents, I'm not wealthy at all, I'm far happier than any of those people. That vocation is something that is internal. It is implanted by God. It is the logos as manifest in you. No different than the logos manifest in the rest of nature. And the third thing is to flee the world, to flee the power structure, to reject the power structure, to delegitimize the power structure, to live according to your vocation, and accept everything that comes to you as expressive as the will of God. This is happiness. This is the nature of wisdom. And to be satisfied with little. Our ancestors didn't need nearly as much as our people today claim to need. And it's my view that these people are happier. All of this is a movement to the spirit. This is central to Skovoroda. You see that this really isn't, I mean, it has systemic elements, but it's not really a system. And you see that this mentality completely negates the mentality of, say, Adam Smith, or Friedrich Nietzsche, or Karl Marx, or Sigmund Freud. All of this is about power and domination. All of it is. No, we're talking about being satisfied with little in terms of material goods and focusing on the world of the spirit. And the fact is that for the saints, you know, the external world then appears differently than it does to the carnal person. And Skovoroda and Solzhenitsyn and Dostoevsky and Gogol and even myself, you know, I don't think that every individual sees the world the same way in terms of objects. You know, a follower of Skovoroda looks at a field, looks at nature, and sees the hand of God. A follower of Friedrich Nietzsche will look at a field and see a way of making money, to see a way of dominating others. Can I buy this? Can I lease this out to people? Can I exploit people with it? We don't view objects the same way. This is a matter of the spirit dictating what's actually out there. And those who follow the world of the spirit see external objects very differently than those who believe that external objects are the only things in existence. So, finally, for Skovoroda, he has five things that he holds as central to the movement towards God. Number one, building on these virtues. The rejection of the power structure. Number two, focusing on the ancients. That, you know, the Old Testament prophets, Plato, Marcus Aurelius, obviously Christ himself, the church fathers, these people had it right in one form or another. The church fathers are absolutely central. St. Ambrose, St. Augustine, St. John Chrysostom. These people dealt with the relation of the spiritual world on the one hand to the empire on the other hand. And of course, 4 and 5, the scriptures, that includes the writing of the church fathers and the ancient liturgies of the church. All of these things manifest the world of the spirit. All of these things create an alternative universe to that which exists purely as appearance, manipulation, power, cause and effect. So what we've done today is given a synopsis of Grigory Skovoroda, the Ukrainian Socrates as he's known, and given the idea of really what the Ukrainian Orthodox vision is. I don't want to sound preachy here. That's not my intention, but I want to be accurate. And I want to give a strong sense of what the Orthodox vision is. That is part of the purpose of this show. And what the specific Ukrainian vision is relative to the work of Grigory Skovoroda. And he is somebody very much worth a reading and worth understanding. And he writes in this kind of, you know, this poetic way, and so it can be a very difficult and very dense way, but I strongly recommend you read some of his stuff and get to see what Skovoroda is all about and why he's ignored in the West. So I want to thank you for listening. I appreciate your indulgence. I appreciate my critics as well as my friends. You both serve a purpose, and I want to thank you and the Voice of Reason and everyone else that's helped me here very much. God bless, and I will talk to you guys later.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Medievalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
You're tuned in to